This podcast contains mention of rape and sexual abuse. Hi everybody, it's Emily here from the Willow Pod, and today I'm talking to Rena and Anita from Sale. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
So just before we start, just remind me what SAIL stands for again.
So it's Sexual Abuse Incest Line.
And you're based in Chesterfield, aren't you?
Yes.
We also have hubs across Derbyshire that we also do counselling out of.
I think we're going to talk about that in a moment, but you've come on today because this podcast is going out during Sexual Abuse and Sexual Violence Awareness Week. You're doing this podcast with me, but what else are you doing to observe the week?
So we've got a couple of things in store, really. Our sort of main social media handle is Twitter. So we'll be putting posts out on a daily basis just to get connected with the community, raise awareness and perhaps start some conversations. We've also got some short videos that we're wanting to share just to give people more awareness about who we are, where we are and what we do. A little bit of a tour of our building, services that we offer, including the group work that's on offer as well. So we're really trying to make an impact during the week and not only let people know who we are, but also start that conversation around sexual abuse and sexual violence, and importantly connect with others so that they're aware of what support is available.
So I guess trying to break down one of the barriers to reporting, which is that not knowing what you are and what you do. But there's lots of barriers to reporting, aren't they, to reporting sexual abuse?
Absolutely. Anita, feel free to jump in. So to kind of explore that, we've looked into the reasons that we see as an organisation once somebody has reported to us, but also the training that we deliver from talking to other professionals, and importantly those with lived experiences, hearing their voices and what they've experienced. So there's huge reasons why somebody may not report, not disclose, not want to talk, or think about doing any of those three later on in their life. So sometimes it might be because that abuse took place when they were a child. And there's so much that's packed into being a child, let alone the vulnerabilities of that age group. You know, it might be that that abuser is familiar to them, it's a family member, they're worried and scared of the repercussions of talking to somebody about that. They're also conditioned to believe that they're not able to say anything to anybody. They're made to feel that that it's their fault. And there's a lot of blame and shame and guilt that's actually attached to that experience. It could be that somebody has cultural or religious beliefs that go completely against opening up and talking about what's happening to them. It might also be that they're just not aware of the support that is available. Or importantly, they don't understand that what's happening to them is illegal and it's not right.
So part of the problem is when you go through sexual abuse or sexual violence trauma, that disconnects you from other people. So you may not trust the authorities to report to the police, but you may not want to reach out to services because you might think that you're going to be made to report that to the police. So that's another thing that we're seeing. And another thing that I've seen in my practice, and there's been some figures on it over time, was that men in particular, it takes them a while to remember the abuse. So memory issues is definitely a real thing. And they've done some research on it, and there's something like 28 years from the point of having the abuse to actually those memories resurfacing. And that's what makes people report later in life. But if we look at some of the statistics, we have like 1 in 4 women have been raped or sexually abused as an adult. That's 1 in 18 men as an adult. And 1 in 6 children, unfortunately, have been abused. So in that, a lot of times children will keep quiet, or sometimes they might report it to their family and their caretakers, and they might not be believed. And this is another thing that we see as well a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of that, of children not being believed and the abuse carries on. It must be awful. It's just unfathomable, really, as to the average person, I guess, that this happens.
Absolutely.
And especially when it's within a family as well, it's just not nice to think about.
Like when you think about all of the dynamics that are attached to that as well, and just the utter crippling fear as a child and as an adult that you experience, whether that is a one-off incident or an ongoing time that abuse is taking place, you are in fear of your life, you know, and it can be incredibly difficult to open up and get to a point to be able to talk about that. But, you know, what Anita was saying in terms of trust is absolutely there, because the key thing in terms of that happening to you is your trust and privacy have been completely and utterly broken. And it is possibly the most severe of things to happen to you. To then find the courage and the trust to be able to then say that to somebody can be quite crippling and very, very difficult for children and adults to then go on and explore and open up about.
And it goes without saying that when this happens to a child, the impact it has, even if it's something that they block out of their memory, the impact is still going to be tremendous on them throughout their life and their ability to form relationships and, absolutely, like you say, to trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because trauma just disconnects us from each other. And that's another reason why people won't go and seek out help, because they don't feel connected to themselves, first of all, but also to others. And like you said, some of the effects that it has, not on just on relationships, but on physical health, mental health, all of these have repercussions for many, many years, particularly if the trauma is not processed and dealt with sensitively.
We absolutely see that, you know, on the ISVA service as well, in terms of looking at that holistic package of support for somebody, how it can affect education, employment, housing is a massive one in terms of that support, and how that trauma just kind of has that ripple effect on all areas of an individual's life. So to be in a position where you're considering saying something, whether you are a child, but also as an adult that has potentially built a life and has some life experience and a job and a home and a, you know, a family unit around you and children of your own as well, you know, thinking about the ramifications that you may assume would happen once you've opened up and spoke about it are just huge, huge. Mm.
I know just before we started this podcast, I was explaining that I've lived my entire life in one house. And those of you that have listened to other episodes of the podcast will know I was a victim of abuse, which occurred in my own house. Domestic abuse, not sexual abuse, just to make that clear. And the house is supposed to be a place of safety. Mm-hmm. And to, yeah, just again, just processing that. And if you as a child have to remain in that house where the abuse happened, it's just unbearable.
Because you're constantly going to be triggered. You're constantly going to be in that fright, flight or freeze reaction, trauma reactions, until it is sort of looked at and dealt with. But even still, it might just be attached to that environment. Your environment is what usually makes you feel safe. And if that's not there, then your feeling of safety is not going to be there either.
So do you have any other information about why people don't report?
We've got some latest figures on that. So 40% of people don't report due to embarrassment. 38% don't believe the police will help. And 34% think it's humiliating, the whole process, going through the process of reporting. It does take a lot of courage to be able to report, to find help and support. Like I said before, we're wired for connection. And when you have this happen to you, you are disconnected from yourself and others. And therefore, for you to even try and get support or try and report what's happened to you, it is a massively courageous thing.
Like you say, the embarrassment before you begin, but then having to keep going through it to explain it to the different services that are needed to make that report, you would have to keep reliving that experience. So yes, really huge barriers to reporting. But if someone did want to make a report, how would they contact yourselves?
So they can really sort of contact us via the website or also our helpline that we have. So all of the information in terms of contacting us is on our website. And then, as we've mentioned, we've got a helpline where we have dedicated and trained helpline staff to receive that call and talk people through the options. So they will almost act as a filter in terms of what service that person might go on to. And it might mean dual services. So it may mean that they're in counselling as well as accessing the ISWA service. But importantly, if somebody is in a position where they don't know what their reporting options are, they don't know how to report, or they're scared and worried about reporting, on the ISBA service, we are completely independent from the police. Although we work alongside them, we are an independent service, so that we can give that impartial advice around reporting and what to expect. So when we talk about the fear, sometimes that can be relieved by information. Knowledge is power. So being able to advise somebody of what their options are and also what to expect should they want to go forward and report can be quite powerful. There's no obligation to report to access any of the services with SAIL. Really, really important for people to know. And I think also a key point is that we've spoken a lot about the courage that it takes for somebody to come forward. That doesn't always mean reporting. That might mean speaking to a family member, a friend, and or another professional. But also it's important to note that if you don't want to do that, that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay. The support is readily available to you if you come to that decision. And I suppose for children, all of the time we have to make that decision when it comes to safeguarding children and young people. But certainly as adults that may not have any additional vulnerabilities, it's choice, and it's somebody's choice on whether they want to report, disclose, talk, access support. We've heard a lot of late of high profile cases in the media, and then the community's response to that, sometimes that can highlight support that's available and encourage and empower survivors of abuse to come forward. But it can also be quite detrimental, because we get some quite negative responses to that, and particular comments such as "why now?" and "they're only saying so because somebody else has." Well, no, actually what we should be doing is further empowering that individual, you know, and encouraging the fact that they have come forward, because the time's right for them. And it's not up to anybody else but them on when they choose to come forward.
Absolutely. We talk a lot about victim blaming in the domestic abuse field, but we never really talk about it in the sexual abuse field. You're absolutely right. All you ever see is they're jumping on the bandwagon. It's been 30 years. Why don't they just let it go?
Exactly. Yeah. And what we're trying to do is work towards shifting that narrative and just give some more exploration around why people might withhold that. And also, importantly, the difficulties that come with having those very sensitive conversations. So, yeah, we're here to support. We're here if this hits somebody that might be thinking about reporting, if this touches somebody that is thinking about something that might have happened to them as a child last year, 20 years ago, give us a call. You know, we've got our helpline. We can talk you through options.
So how would someone contact you then?
So we've got our website. So if you Googled us, SAIL Derbyshire, that will bring up all of the services. I think the first page is actually the helpline. So it'll give you the phone number. There's also a text service if somebody's feeling uncomfortable about speaking over the phone. Everything is confidential unless there's matters of safeguarding where we need to speak to other professionals. But generally, it's a confidential service. As I say, you can get in touch by phone, by text message, or filling in one of our forms online if that's something that you would prefer. Additionally, we take referrals from external sources as well. So it might mean you might feel more comfortable speaking with another professional that you've built up a working relationship with, and they can send a referral in on your behalf.
And that would also allow people to access the counselling service should they need it, yeah?
Yeah, so when you do contact us, you can say what services that you want. So if you wanted counselling or you wanted ISVA service, etc. So at that point, we would look to book you in for an assessment, usually within 2 weeks of receiving the referral from you. And that assessment basically just gives us some information of where you might be best placed and what counsellor you might be best for. So we have different types of counselling we do. Like Marina said earlier, we do group counselling, but we also have art therapy, and we have just traditional counselling that we can do in person across our counselling hubs in Derbyshire, and also over the phone or online, like Zoom counselling as well.
And just to reiterate, if a person rings you to talk about what they've been through, that doesn't mean that they're going to have to report to the police, unless, of course, they are a child and there's a concern, or a vulnerable adult.
Yeah, so what would happen is when they speak to us, so either if they're speaking to someone on the helpline or they're speaking to us during the assessment, we'll explain the confidentiality behind it. If we believe that there is someone else at risk, so like a child safeguarding risk, then we would have to take that further. But if it was, let's say, an adult who was abused as a child, and maybe that person is no longer around, or they've not heard from them in years and things like that, they don't necessarily have to report that. It just depends on what information they give us in terms of safeguarding.
If somebody rings up, it's about whatever service that you're onto, doing an assessment that best meets their needs. If there are risks that are identified, we will then go on to perhaps calling other services, but that will be fully explained to the caller.
Obviously, I'll put the information in the blurb that accompanies the podcast, but can you just tell us as well how to get in contact with you, the telephone number?
I would just say as well that, you know, the Sexual Abuse and Sexual Violence Week, there are lots of different organisations sort of supporting this and putting out information about it. So it's worth a quick Google on it. But also, if you wanted to support it, they either have a thing where you can wear the colour teal. So that stands for Sexual Abuse and Sexual Violence. And it's from the 5th of February to the 12th of February, where there'd be different things happening across the nation, basically different events and different information coming out, just to raise that awareness.
Thanks, that's really good to know. I will definitely make sure we share any posts that you put on the internet.
Absolutely. So we've got a free phone telephone number, which is 0800 028 2678. And then the text only that we discussed earlier is 07522 561 397. There's also an email, helpline@salederbyshire.org.uk. And if you pop over to our website, which is salederbyshire.org.uk, that will give you full details of the opening hours for the office, but also for the help and the text line as well.
Thanks so much for that. Well, as always, it's been interesting speaking to you both. Not nice, but interesting. And I do hope that the Sexual Abuse and Sexual Violence Awareness Week goes well. And I do hope that anybody who needs support now knows how to get in touch with you. So thank you so much for speaking to me. And
thanks, Emily.
Thanks for the opportunity.
It's quite all right.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.